a new state, a new species. How were you approaching kind of that whole pre-scouting piece without putting boots on the ground? Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Well, welcome to episode 157. This is a fun one. There's lots of laughs in this one, but there's also a ton of good information. We're speaking with a couple of listeners from Texas, and we actually recorded this episode earlier in 2018 about a coos deer hunt that they went on in Arizona. It was their first time hunting out of state. It was their first time hunting coos deer. It was their first time doing like a backcountry or backpack style hunt. So there's a lot to be learned there. We hear about the things they did right and wrong. Ultimately, not to spoil it, but they had some success, and we find out how they got there. So everything from how they scouted, how they learned about the species, how they put together their gear, some of the mistakes they made along the way as well. And as I mentioned, there's just lots of laughs in this one. Before we dive into the show, I wanted to remind you guys about the podcast giveaway we're doing this month, as this is released in January of 2019 with Atomic Athlete and Valley to Peak Nutrition. So head over to exomountaingear.com/podcast. On that page, look for the giveaway link and make sure you go there to learn more about what's up for grabs, as well as the really simple process to get entered. And thanks to everyone who's participated in that so far. All right, let's dive into this show and hear a bit more about hunting coos deer, hunting Arizona, and going on out-of-state adventures with a buddy that you'll remember for a lifetime. Well, guys, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah, and so we have two of you. Go ahead and introduce yourselves individually first. Bradley, go ahead and kick off yourself, and then let's hear this other mysterious voice in the introduction there.
Yeah, I'm Bradley Tyner, just an old country boy, and me and Jeff kind of grew up hunting together and just going from here and hitting some of these good Western hunts together.
So I'm Jeff, born and raised here just south of Dallas. Just like everybody, we've hunted all our lives, archery hunting, bow, rifle, you name it. Cut our teeth on whitetail, and then we, got into the public land game here in Texas, and then we decided to bite the bullet, go out west, and just kind of all downhill from there.
Yeah, which we'll talk about. I'm curious, we were just talking before we hit record about some of the public land hunting that you guys have done there, because, private's expensive in terms of leases and things like that. When we think of public land in Texas, is it still primarily whitetail that you're able to chase there, or what is available really in terms of hunting public land species-wise in Texas?
Yeah, probably your majority is going to be whitetail. I mean, you can go to some of these places, of course, hog hunting's big in Texas. You can go to some of these public lands and do some hog hunting and stuff like that. But, majority it's going to be whitetail hunting.
Yeah, you have areas, mostly like around a lot of your lakes are going to be like a core engineer lake. So a lot of those lakes will have public land. And that's the type of hunting that we were doing. We were doing core engineer public land hunting. And then there's WMAs, yeah, which is like a draw type hunt, and there's some pretty good hunts, doing that, but it's just like a, it'd be like a bighorn sheep tag, it's kind of hard to draw, so.
Wow. So I'm always curious just a little bit of the story. You guys both hunted for years. Did you know each other from early on, or how did you come together to start hunting, I guess?
Let me tell you how I think this thing got started off.
These stories are always good. I like this.
So we met, pretty much through church. Yeah. We're, you know, kids. I think I'm 4 years older than Jeff. So maybe three. I don't know.
Older and wiser. And,
yeah, older and wiser.
That's what he thinks.
So, you know, we knew each other through church, hanging out, talking about, we used to be big time duck hunters back in the day, back in our young days.
Public land.
Public land, you know, hunt the lakes, whatever we could get our hands on. And, you know, I think what got Jeff hanging out with me is when I turned 16 and I got my driver's license, and then he had someone to take him hunting.
There's some truth in that for sure. And we had good times, you know, and yeah.
But I mean, we slayed some ducks and we just kind of hit it off, man. We both think alike. We both have kind of the same way of hunting, the same way of, you know, it's not about going out there and who can kill the first one or the most or whatever. It's just going about out there and just enjoying it.
Yeah. Just the experience and, you know, all together. And, you know, and we were kids, like you said. So, you know, we didn't have the luxury of just, you know, land here in Texas or thousands of acres. So, you know, we would take advantage of, you know, whatever we could find. And so, you know, any type of public land we could get a hold of, you know, that's where we were going.
Yeah.
So, and like you say, you know, he was 16 years old. I was, you know, 13, 14. We're just a bunch of, you know, teenage kids with some shotguns and archery equipment. And, you know, of course, I have, you know, mentors, you know, like my dad and, you know, grandpa and, you know, such things like that. But, you know, I guess, the same age, you know, that's kind of how we all, you know, both of us, that's kind of, we were the running buddies, I guess, so to speak.
I see it.
That's cool. You guys have been hunting together for years now, you know, more than a decade, did ducks, started doing the public land thing in Texas, trying to get away from crowds. We talked a little bit about that, I think, before we recorded. When was the kind of the itch to get out west and kind of get into some bigger country and different species? Was that super recent, or have you guys been talking about that for years and just recently made it come together? How did that happen, Jeff?
I'll tell the story on this one. So, you know, I'm a fireman, and I hired on with the Dallas Fire Department, and about 3 or 4 years into the job, I met a guy, his name was Scott O'Keefe, and he was like, you know, he obviously saw my passion for hunting. You know, I was just ate up with it. And it was, at the time, it was just more or less whitetails. And, he says, man, you gotta go mule deer hunting with me. And he said, so they had 20,000 acres in, the Trans-Pecos region of Texas, which was out towards El Paso. And, so he invited me to go out there. We actually went out there, varmint hunting in February. And he said, we're going to have a spot open. Come check it out. And it was a lease. So this is private land. Went out there and I just fell in love with just the open country desert, you know, style of hunting, you know, and then that's whenever I was like, man, I gotta get more of this. Like I've been missing out my entire life on this open country, you know, Western style. And so then we started digging in, you know, hey, how can we get on more of these hunts, you know, and, you know, researching what species should we hunt first? What can we get a tag in, you know, that kind of stuff. And then obviously, you know, once we started doing that research, you know, Bradley with my, you know, that was going to be the first person that I was going to try to drag with me, you know, and that's basically how it started, you know. So if it wasn't for the guy up in Dallas, you know, I would have never been introduced to it.
Yeah.
So
the hunt we're going to spend most of the time talking about tonight was your first back in Trenton. It's actually for coos deer, which, you know, I talk to guys all the time about their first Western hunt, and they could be from Texas or Pennsylvania or anywhere. And coos deer isn't the first. I mean, it's mule deer and it's elk, or sometimes it's even a bear hunt or an antelope hunt. But I mean, I guess that makes a bit more sense with you guys being down south there and kind of having close access to coos habitat. But was there anything else that went into you guys choosing coos deer for this first backcountry hunt?
So the reason we agreed on coos deer was because, you know, we didn't have the experience of going out on an elk hunt. We didn't have the experience of going out on a mule deer hunt. So to answer your question, the reason we chose coos was because they're a small animal. And so, you know, we were comfortable going 4, 5, 6, you know, however far we needed to go and, you know, surviving, you know, quote unquote, in the backcountry. But we just didn't want to, you know, have a 500-pound, 700-pound pack out. You know, we wanted to be able to throw it on our backs and, you know, pack it out in one haul. So we felt like we would cut our teeth on coos deer and then just kind of, you know, graduate, you know, bigger animals, you know, as we, you know, learn the ropes.
Man, Considering my first Western pack out was half of a bull elk, I would say that that was a smart move on your guys' part.
No doubt, yeah. Although we are looking, you know, we're looking forward to an elk hunt, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So, yeah, Nathan, I guess just with coos specifically, we haven't talked much about coos in general, and I'm just curious from your perspective, begin to break down choosing estates, kind of tag acquisition. How was that? Was that something you're putting in points for, a draw for? Once you got a tag, how are you kind of determining units? What, how did that all play out for you in terms of where the heck are we going to go hunt coos deer?
Well, we kind of decided on Arizona for sure. And we decided we were going to put in, you know, for the draw, all that on a unit that was just killer, you know. And then if we don't, we're going to go for a leftover tag, you know. And so we didn't get drawn, of course, because it was like, you know, whatever, slim to none odds. And
so like we were putting in for like a slam dunk, so to speak. So we were putting in for like the 12B, 13, you know, 13A, you know, the up north towards the Grand, you know, in the Grand Canyon area, mm-hmm. for mule deer. And then, you know, we knew we weren't going to draw. And then go ahead.
And yeah, so we just said, we're going to look into this. We're going to find some leftover tags. We're going to find something we can get in that, you know, has some access. It's not just, you know, craziness to get in there or whatever. It's our first hunt. We're going to go out there and we're going to find something that's doable, but still tough. And something that has decent success rate. And we just kept researching and we found what we were looking for. We talked to people. We talked to people, you know, emailed people over in the area and
yeah, in the hunting pool.
Hunting pool and all that, and talked to them, and we found a unit, and we just, that's kind of how we wound up where we were at.
Okay. And it was via leftover tags?
It was leftovers, yeah.
And so we actually put in, there were, I think on the leftover tags, you can put in for four different units. And, you know, we had been talking to Austin at the hunting pool. And anyway, long story short, we actually drew a unit that, or we got the unit that it was our last choice. It was our fourth choice, luckily. And it turned out, you know, just to be one of those units. We're like, man, this is an awesome unit. Even though it's not really, really, it doesn't look appealing on paper, you know, but you know, once we were there, we were able to find areas that were away from everybody, and it just really worked out.
So what, how approaching this, a new state, a new species, how were you approaching kind of that whole pre-scouting piece without putting boots on the ground? Were you pretty much just focusing on getting away from people and roads and then hoping that it was good habitat? What was that like?
Just like anything, you know, we did up all night, you know, just couldn't sleep, especially, you know, a few weeks out from the hunt. You know, we were doing a lot of, you know, aerial views and that kind of stuff, trying to find water, you know, and then also a lot, you know, from the hunting pool, you know, we were in, you know, the hunting pool has that deal where you can contact other people that have hunted the units. And so, you know, that was definitely, you know, it definitely helped, you know, especially a good starting point. And, but yeah, and then once we got there, we talked to a border patrol, and yeah, that was actually pretty wild. Cause you know, it's, we were actually right on the border. We were
probably
just
10 miles at the most.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And so we actually had to go into a border town, you know, for a few things, you know, supplies and whatnot. And, we talked to a border patrol guy, and he actually had illegals in the back of his truck. And so he was like, yeah, you know, definitely look out for them. He said, we've been seeing a lot of deer, so, you know, y'all should be in for a good hunt. So,
wow.
And the Border Patrol guys actually gave us some decent info, man. You know, we were kind of joking with him when we first got to him and said, hey, man, are the illegals really as bad as they seem out here? And that's what, like Jeff said, I got four of them in the back of my truck right now. all right.
Yeah.
But I mean, he tells us, you know, they have those sensors, those ground sensors and all that. And he said they run and check those. And he kind of told us where they were, you know, running these trails. And he said, man, we jumped deer in there and we kind of jumped deer in there. And
it was more or less like, you know, like canyons and places that have water. You know, he kind of like showed us some places on the map where they've located deer. And, you know, we just, you know, once he showed us that, we were like, okay, well, let's figure out why there's deer here. You know, and it's, you know, canyons, you know, places that have water, you know, such things like that.
Okay. So I'm new to like thinking of hunting in and with that type of terrain, with canyons and things like that. But do you know what holds deer there? I mean, obviously it's a low point. I could see water being there, but I think shade could probably be a factor too. Like where it's cooler in a canyon, they can kind of get some shade and relief. Is that part of it, you think?
Man, I don't know that they were, because those little suckers, man, they'll find shade under a freaking bush.
Under a rock, yeah.
You know, they'll lay up next to a dang rock that's got some shade. There, it's just them coos deer are something different. And you know, we went out there to hunt whitetails, is I think what we went for, and it took us about 3 days to figure them out.
Yeah, it took us a few days to really, you know, get on them and really find the type of country that we were looking for. Because, you know, hunting out in the Trans-Pecos area of Texas, you know, I had a little bit of experience behind some glass, and you know, but we the first area that we went to was, man, there was a lot of trees, and I don't even know what kind of trees those were, but they were, you know,
there was a bunch like of cedars and some oaks mixed in there and some stuff, but
it was so hard to glass. I mean, and we seen some deer, but we were like, we have to find country that is easier to glass. You know, it's just so thick. You know, I'm sure there were deer sign everywhere. You know, you could see, you know, tracks and droppings and everything else. We knew there were deer there. We just couldn't see them. And so that's when the hunt began for, you know, more of open country. Yeah.
But to kind of answer your question, I would say water is probably key. You kind of got to find that water to kind of locate your deer.
Yeah.
That may not be where you shoot your deer, you know, but
they're definitely going to be around.
But they're going to be in that area.
For sure.
And that's kind of how we started getting on them and finding them and finding how they act and finding what they do and trying to pattern them.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, definitely, I want to come back to more on that. I don't want to skip over the whole Border Patrol encounter, as well as I'm sure you guys had that on your mind, knowing where you were going, just the whole proximity to the border and potential run-ins. What was going through your thoughts heading into the hunt? Were you taking any sort of certain precautions? Like, because that's something that most people don't have to think about with a hunt. But if I was headed there, it was within 10 miles of the border, I'd be some serious thinking on that one.
So whenever we drew, or whenever we were looking into the, you know, the southern regions of Arizona, you know, Austin up at the Hunting Fool, he had told us, you know, that, yeah, there's the potential for illegals. He said, but I wouldn't let it scare you. He said, definitely, you know, use common sense while you're there. You know, if you see a pack, you know, like a bag laying on the ground, don't approach it, you know, just common sense type stuff. But no, we definitely had, you know, sidearms and that kind of thing, you know, going in, because, you know, if we're going to be in the backcountry, you know, the last thing I want to do is, you know, be asleep somewhere and somebody, you know, come up on us. But, you know, it was definitely an eye opener. It was an eye opener for me, at least. You know, we're, you know, what, 13 hours from home.
Yeah.
And, you know, you know, we don't see that kind of thing here, you know, up in the Dallas area, you know, of course. So we get out there and it's like, oh my gosh, there really are, you know, people that are, you know, crossing this country. And, Ben, you know what, you know, honestly, my hat's almost off to them, because if they're going to cross that country and survive, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, give them their citizenship. I mean, cause it is some rough country out
there. They earned it, huh?
Tell you what, man, you know, watch Border Patrol and stuff like that on TV, and you see it, and like Jeff said, man, you really don't realize how crazy it is. I mean, we'd be sitting there glassing, and all of a sudden you'd start hearing this noise, and we're like, man, what is that? And all of a sudden this Border Patrol helicopter would be coming through the valley next to you, or
horseback.
You know, or you'd see, we'd be glassing, and you'd see them on horseback on, you know, five ridges over. And,
wow.
You know, we had to go back to town, I think maybe two times in a 7 or 8 day hunt. And I promise you, every time we went back to town, which was probably 45 to an hour minute drive, I promise you, we saw a Border Patrol on the side of the road
with illegals.
That had illegals handcuffed, sitting down, processing them every time.
And every time those, you know, when I say hats off to the illegals, I mean, they're out there in this country, and, you know, water is hard to find. And they have nothing but their clothes on their back. I mean, you know, and
that's it.
I mean, they're not out there with packs, with water, with food, with nothing. That's like, wow, how are these people doing this?
Man, that's,
you know,
wild.
We're going on a 7 day hunt, and we have the whole kitchen sink, you know, loaded up with us, you know.
So this was, you guys were packing in? You didn't have a camp like at the truck, right? You packed in, slept under the stars, did that whole deal?
A couple of the days we did.
Okay. And that was new for you, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So how did that go? Did you feel prepared for it? Were you guys like
absolutely
just overwhelmed by it? I want to learn more about that because I know that there's guys listening who are in that position of thinking on going this multi-day hunt, and there's this barrier of like leaving the truck and being self-sufficient and sleeping under the stars and all that. So how was it for you guys?
You know, I think our biggest thing was we packed in. I think we were fine with that. We packed in what, like
5 miles?
5 miles the first day. We went off. We had our game plan. We're like, we're going to get to here. We're going to set up camp, you know, and we're going to hunt this area. And we got in there, you know, and it wasn't bad. You know, that first night under the stars, it was a little crazy. You know, you just don't never know what's out there. Is there a mountain lion sneaking up behind me? You know, you just never know. And
snakes, rattlesnakes.
Yeah. You know, and it turned out fine. But what led us not to do it, you know, consecutively is, you know, we didn't go in knowing where we were going to hunt. Mm-hmm. Or really how to hunt these deer. So we weren't trying to stay in the same place and make an actual camp because we hadn't really figured out what we're doing yet.
Yeah. So when we went in, we knew that we wanted to stay mobile. You know, we kind of wanted to go to the backcountry. We were going to spend a few nights out there. And I will say one thing that I did wrong. And I think, you know, Brad would say the same thing is I weighed my pack. So before we left, my pack was weighing like 70 pounds.
Holy smokes.
I was way too heavy.
And I think I was upper 50s, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I had like two tripods. I had my rifle. I mean, you name it. Like I said, a while ago, when I said we had the whole kitchen sink, I mean, we literally had whole kitchen sink on our backs.
And,
you know, but you learn from it. And so we went from, you know, like I say, 4 or 5 miles or so. And I was telling Brad, I was like, oh my gosh, this pack is so heavy. And, you know, the terrain out there is no joke. I mean, it's, you know, there's some pretty, you know, I don't remember what the elevation was.
I don't know. We went up and down it
there's,
a lot.
Yeah. I mean, there were some pretty steep canyons through that country. And, it was definitely, we learned a lot from it for sure. And even if, you know, looking back, you know, even if we just, you know, if you, you know, have just enough supply to go out for, say, you know, 2 days, one night, you know, because, you know, realistically, you know, I feel like most people or, you know, us, you know, we train, you know, just about every day. But, you know, going 5 miles really is not that big of a deal. So if you can stay light and then have enough to spend the night out there, and you're looking back, that's what we would do different. And we're planning on doing this hunt again this year. So, you know, hopefully
we'll get to that, but I need redemption.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. So what are some of the, you guys went in with the kitchen sink and all of that stuff. What are some of the standout items that you're like, yeah, that's not needed. Like what, when you think of going in lighter, on that hunt again this year, what are some of the things that are not going to be in that pack?
So I guess I'll speak up. So what I took, since I was the heaviest, I took like extra change of clothes, you know, which you can, I ditch that. I had two tripods. I had a spot and scope and binoculars. I would probably get rid of one, you know, if say Bradley takes his binoculars and I would take my spot and scope or vice versa, you know?
Yeah. I think that's great to tag team the optics.
Yeah. And, you know, just things like that. So, I mean, a lot of the gear that we were using is not like a backcountry specific type gear. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more or less gear that you can go to Walmart or Academy or wherever and pick it up, you know. So a lot of it was, you know, heavier gear.
Yeah.
And, you know, and obviously, you know, we were looking at temps at like 45 degrees, 40 degrees at night and, you know, up closer to the 90s during the day.
Yeah.
So, you know, clothing really wasn't that big of a deal, but for whatever reason, I packed like 2 or 3 days worth of clothes. And, and then water, you know, which water was an issue, you know, going in. We didn't know exactly where the water was. And, you know, we had planned that we were going to filter water and that type of thing, but I don't know. I took a whole Camelback full of water. And then also, you know, I had a couple of jugs full of water as well. Yeah. So I could probably get rid of some of that also.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm kind of with Jeff too, man. You know, I look back and I'm like, man, what did I have in that pack? You know, it had to have been way more than I thought it was, but you know, the same thing. I think I had 2 changes of clothes, which, you know, now that I listen to, especially some of y'all's podcasts talking about, absolutely, you know, what to wear, make sure you got the right stuff. You don't have to take that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, you know, probably took 7 days worth of food, and I don't, yeah, really think we were planning on staying out there 7 days. You know, I guess, like Jeff said, if we wanted to pack back to the truck 5 miles and just, you know, leave our camp and go back, that's really not an issue for us. So we would probably look at that, maybe take a couple of days worth of the stuff versus a week, yeah, unless we were on a hunt where we're like, man, we're going in 10 miles, we have to take it all, you know?
Right.
Yeah, man, I think that's really smart too, especially when you're going into new country. And if, you know, if you're not sure that you want to invest all of your time hunting that spot, like, I think that's brilliant to go in for, you know, gear for 2 or 3 days.
Sure.
And then either go after 2 or 3 days, yeah, maybe we're into them and we can make a quick resupply run and come back. Or after 2 or 3 days, we're going to go to plan B.
Right.
But when you pack in with that 7 days worth of gear and you're throwing all of your chips into that one basket and just hoping, right, it's going to be good, I mean, that's definitely a gamble and probably not, you know, like, and I'm saying that's probably not the smartest thing, having done that multiple times into, right, a new country, you know, like, so I'm not saying that just theoretically, I'm saying that looking back at some of my own experiences too, that, you know, if you're headed into new country, you know, that's maybe not the approach to take.
Yeah, definitely stay mobile. Yeah. Definitely stay light. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Unless you've had your scouting time and you kind of know what you're doing.
Right.
Don't go overboard.
And you know, another thing is, and we even talked about it, we didn't do it, you know, we even talked about even just taking one rifle, you know, because you think about a rifle, you know, most, yeah, rifles are going to weigh somewhere between, you know, 7 to 12 pounds.
Yep.
And, you know, if we just one of us, you know, say one of us carries a good, you know, Manfrotto tripod and the other guy carries a rifle, then we're evened out, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you can share the weapon, what we talked about earlier with the optic deal. And then obviously,
right,
you know, you can take that to extremes. I know that, some of my buddies that I know, they share stoves and stuff like that, where, you know, typically I have one and my buddy has one just for a backup or to cook at the same time. But, definitely look for ways where you can tag team gear, you know, split up the shelter. One guy carries the body, one guy carries the pole, and really even that stuff out big time.
Well worth it. Well worth it.
And you know, going out there, we didn't have a shelter, so we just threw a foam pad on the ground with our sleeping bag.
Oh, nice.
You know, we weren't, you know, because, you know, we're in the desert, so we're not really worried about rain.
So you were at 70 pounds without a tent.
Without a tent. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I had everything. I mean, looking back, it's like, what was I doing? But yeah.
That's funny. I think you're just training to pack a coos out, right? Because, like, you can get out, you know, bone a coos out, and you're probably at 70 pounds.
Probably less.
So yeah. the very first, the pack in, when we started in, you know, I don't know, we're 2 or 3 miles into this, and, you know, it's probably pushing, which, you know, we're from Texas, so it's hot, you know, so we're used to heat. And, but it's 90 degrees, and we're in elevation, and we're climbing these canyons, and I'm looking back, and I'm like, I am beat down, you know, with 70 yeah. pounds on my back. So, but yeah, it was definitely an experience.
Yeah. So speaking of stuff you brought and things you learned from what you brought, how did food work out for you guys? What did you do? What was the approach and did it work well?
You know, I took, me personally, I'll tell you kind of what I took. I took more like just some regular old, you know, oat and honey granola bars. And I took a bunch of just mixed nuts and some dehydrated fruits and some dehydrated vegetable stuff. Kind of stuff like that. And I think that was fine.
Some beef jerky.
Yeah. And some beef jerky. Jeff made a big old thing of beef jerky. I'll tell you what I kind of got jealous of, though, as we were going along. Jeff had went to GNC or somewhere and bought some of these awesome stinking
cookies
and like, and like these protein bars that had like white chocolate and stuff on them. And I was like, dude, you have got to split that with me. So, you know, it's nice to have all this good, healthy stuff too, but also, man, you got to think, you know, them sugars and stuff in those bars that he had, man, you could tell the difference in eat one of those versus, you know, eat a couple handful of nuts and some dehydrated fruit or something. It's a world of difference.
Yeah, and I forget the name. I think it was called, they're called like Crazy Larry or something, these cookies.
Oh, so, yeah, is you, it, you, they have like is it Lenny and Larry or something?
Lenny, that's it. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, and we would. He's like, man, you got to give me one of the cookies. So I'd break a piece off and give it to him. It was like a mouth explosion. You know, you go a couple of days without really eating, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is so good.
That's so funny, man. So funny. So, let's get into the hunt. We kind of talked a little bit earlier, just about you guys figuring things out in the first couple of days and kind of beginning to understand these deer. What was your strategy going into the hunt, and then how did that change over those first couple of days?
So going into the hunt, our strategy really was to stay mobile, even though our packs were weighing 70 pounds. And, you know, until we can find, you know, a good, what we felt like a good number of deer, where we kind of look some deer over and, you know, get a good idea of what kind of representative coos that we can find for the unit. And so the first few days, you know, going into this hunt, honestly, we didn't see much. And so then it was like, well, we're just going to, you know, even stay more mobile. And that's when we went back to the truck and we would just kind of run up and down, you know, every canyon that we could find. You know, I would say anywhere from 1 to 3 miles until we could really find, you know, the number of coos that we were looking for, you know, where we could look them over. And then we finally found an area that held deer. And, you know, there were just a lot of coos in this little, and really it was kind of more like a flat, you know, like mule deer desert land. And, there was just a bunch of coos in there. And then there was also a bunch of water in that area. And that's kind of how we got on them. But, yeah, you know, the first few days, it was rough. You know, the first 3 days, we probably seen four or five deer. We seen a couple of bucks that, you know, tempted us, but we were like, man, it's like the first or second day. We don't really know what other kind of bucks are out here. So we passed on a few.
So maybe to kind of lay out first 3 days. So first day we had planned to go up in this canyon, and it's a long, long canyon. And we went way up in the middle of this thing, and you know, and we really, if you ask me, and looking back at it, we did it all backwards.
Yeah, we shouldn't have been in the canyon.
We went right down the middle of this canyon and probably pushed every coos deer that was in there up over the next ridge.
Because people have told us that this is a good canyon.
Right, and we've never hunted this kind of terrain.
You just approached it the wrong way.
We approached it the whole wrong way. And instead of getting up high and kind of looking down on them and glassing into them, I feel like we just pushed them out.
Yeah.
And so that's why we really didn't see anything the first couple of days. And then, you know, like day three or so, we go and like we were talking about earlier, we go to a whole different area that's like thick cedar trees and some oak trees. And we find some vantage points, some high points, and kind of a funny little story. We're up, I guess it's day three morning or something. We're up on this ridge. We before it got dark the night before, we said, hey, we're going to make it to that little ridge and we're going to glass this whole bowl. So we get there and we're up there and it gets daylight and Jeff's like, man, I don't like this spot. He said, we need to be up there. And I'm looking up and I'm like, dude, that's an hour hike up there to get up there. And he said, well, you know what? You can stay here and I'm going to go up to the top and I'm going to look on this side and that side. So he starts going and I'm sitting there just kind of like, man, is he really going to go? And he's just going. Finally, I pick up my crab, wipe my tears, and I'm like, and I'm sitting there the whole time behind him halfway up this mountain. Jeff, this is stupid. This is dumb. I'm already frustrated because we ain't seeing no deer. And, you know, we get to the top and we really, be honest, man, Jeff saw one deer and I bet it was 2,500 yards away up on top of a ridge, and it was just an old coos doe walking up on top.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a fun experience. It was cool. It was awesome being on, like, I mean, it was probably one of the highest peaks out there, I'd probably have to say.
And that was my whole thinking. I was like, you know, let's just get to the highest spot that we can see
everything, you know, from up there.
Yeah. So I'm going to break out my loophole gold ring, you know, and I'm going to start breaking this country apart. Well, it was just too thick.
Yeah. Yeah, you just real quick too, to take that diversion, and then I want to continue to hear how this went down. You mentioned earlier you had binos and a spotter, and then you just mentioned loophole. What was the optic setup you guys went with, and then why did you choose that stuff coming from Texas and hunting whitetails where optics aren't, you know, super critical?
So to answer that question, so I had a Primos trigger stick, and I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Uh-huh.
And but it's not really a tripod for glassing.
Yeah.
So I took the head off my trigger stick and put a cheap little head from Amazon on it. And it's because everybody, you know, on social media and other, you know, hunting forums and whatnot, you see, you know, hey, you gotta have a tripod, you gotta have them mounted to a tripod, you know, yada yada yada. Well, I was like, well, this will work, you know. And so that's what I use. And so I had unfortunately I had a Leupold Golden Ring. I think it's like a 12 to 40 by 60. And it was a nice spotting scope, but I just never had a mean to mount it to a tripod. We would just use it for sighting in rifles and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I just figured out a way to mount it to what I had. And then once we go on this hunt, I found out how crucial it is to really have to have those optics stabilized on a good tripod.
Right.
Yep. Same way, man. I was kind of hunting the same quality stuff. I had my spotting scopes were Leupold as well. And then, got Vortex, binoculars and stuff. So that's kind of what we were with. And it is, man. It's in that country, you've got to have some good clear glass or you're going to miss them.
You know, but I think that the moral to the story, to this whole story is, you know, we didn't, so, A few things that I did know is you needed to have good boots, a good pack, and just the ethic or, you know, willing to work to get where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, you know, we got that. And everything else, it was definitely lower quality stuff, you know, and that, I guess that's just from inexperience, you know, not going out there, not really knowing what to use or, you know, what gear to have, you know, but, you know, that's how we learn everything really is through just the hard knocks. But
yeah,
I really wouldn't have it any other way, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's okay. And that's natural. You know, I think there is a few key things you have to make sure you get right, like boots and packs, cause they're critical. But yeah, I mean, you could kill yourself and kill your budget and all kinds of stuff trying to be high end and everything from the get go. And plus the other thing, when you're kind of using that suboptimal gear or what have you, sometimes you can get away with knowing I don't need the best in this, like this is good enough. And then the other thing is now when you do want to step up and upgrade some things, you know what to look for because you're like, well, this didn't work, so I need to find this. Not just because it's expensive or not just because somebody in a forum said it was good, but now I actually know what I'm looking for when I want to move into a high-end whatever.
And then going back to the whole expense deal, you know, that was really part of the whole reason why we kind of got into the Western hunting was because, you know, there is a lot of public lands out West. And so, you know, you can go on some of these hunts for a lot cheaper than you can hunt here. And, you know, and then plus once you get out there, it's not about the hunt. It's really just more or less about the experience and the time out there. And, you know, there's just so many lessons learned, you know, life lessons.
Well, let's keep the hunt moving. You guys climbed up that mountain too thick. Where did things go from there?
I guess so. We come down from there. We went to the truck, you know, we stayed in the truck that night. And I guess that next day would be the day that we finally found our little honey hole.
Yeah.
We were talking to another guy, you know, that had been there. And I think he was leaving that day, honestly. We talked to several people out there, and they kind of gave us a little hints here and there and stuff. But we found these deer, and we found a good water hole. And actually, that day, Jeff, we saw some deer on this water hole, and I was sneaking up trying to get within about 200 yards of it. And Jeff was staying back glassing, and these deer disappeared, and I was within 200 yards. And all of a sudden, here they come back out, and there was a pretty nice 8-point. And I made the mistake of just not taking my time. I got excited, you know, like we all do. And
sure. And
I missed this buck.
He was nice.
Yeah. Pretty nice 8-point, pretty solid 8 coos deer. And he went up and over the hill and gone. And, you know, I was kind of down and out and all that. And, you know, we revamped and got back on.
But we saw deer in that area. And that's what, so Bradley was down. He was down and out. You know, we finally, you know, here we are, you know, day 4 or so on the hunt and, you know, haven't really seen much. We're kind of scrambling at this point, you know, and there's a lot of hunters, a lot of road hunters. And so, you know, we finally found this area, find a nice buck, and, you know, it wasn't able to make it happen. But I was like, but Brad, you know, listen, we haven't been seeing deer. We've seen, you know, I don't know, I think we saw five or six deer.
It was five or six and yeah. A little bone down in there.
And I was like, you know, there's deer here, you know, and they're here. They've got to be here for a reason. And
yeah. I'd say from there on, we kind of ended it out on a positive note on that day. You know, we got our vibe back out. We went back to the truck. And we actually, I had, before we, when we went to town, just for grins, I threw some sausages in the cooler on ice, and we went back, man, we had some sausages on the grill and stuff at the truck and got our attitudes back the next day.
And so that at that point, I would say that's kind of when we started, that's whenever we more or less ditched the, we were still in the back country, you know, we were probably 3 miles in, but we realized, hey, we don't have to go in with everything on our backs. If we take a little bit of water, a little bit of food, and just get back there to where the deer are at, we can make this hike back in the dark, you know, so we can leave before daylight. We can be there in, you know, an hour, and then we can, when it gets dark, we can make the hour hike back, you know, with our headlamps.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of when it all changed.
And then, so if you want, we can go on to the next day, and this is, I guess the next day is when you shot your deer.
I think so. Yeah.
So I'll kind of start this one out and then let Jeff take it on to when we get behind the gun. So we're out there and we're on this water hole and we're glassing and man, we're seeing deer. We've got deer coming down the hill. They're coming down and around and we saw one nice buck and I was like, man, you know, it was a big Symmetra. It was a 10, wasn't it?
I think it was a 10. And then there was a big 7 point with me too.
And a big 7. And they were kind of tickling horns and stuff. And the bigger deer was pushing the littler deer. And
when these deer came over up and over the hill, I mean, they were, they were just acting like a whitetail that I know. You know, like a Texas whitetail, they've come down and they're looking, you know, they're smelling, you know, because they're coming down to that water and we knew they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, they're hitting the shade, you know, every single time they would stop in the shade, but they're looking and, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, look at this. These deer are acting just like a whitetail would, you know.
Yeah. They are. And so we hunt that morning, you know, for whatever reason it was, we just never shot one of those deer, got a shot at one. I don't know.
Too far from the water hole.
I think we're a little too far. And wanted to make a good shot this time. And so we watched where these deer went after they watered and they were going to bed because it was starting to heat up. So we come up with this plan, you know.
It's
we're
about
gonna,
10 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
In the morning. Yeah. We're going to go around. We're going to make the distance and walk all the way around this hillside. And we're going to come up the backside to where we think they went. And so we walk back there. You know, it's a good hour and a half hike around this thing. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing that really kind of helped us, I think, is Jeff had this idea of.
And I learned this from mule deer hunting.
Is one guy looking, the other guy walking. So
like
I'd glass where we were hunting, and then he'd walk probably 100 yards while I was glassing.
Just because, you know, you're going to catch that ear flicker, that head movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would stop, and I'd walk 100 yards past him. And vice versa. And so we get around.
Right.
Yeah, just leapfrogging. And so we got around to the very end of this ridge that we thought they were at.
And we thought for sure that they were going to be in the bottom of this ridge because either way they went, we would have seen them go up. So we're like, they got to be in the bottom of this thing.
So we get around there and we're glassing and we're looking on the hillside that we were on the ridge of that we come up on and we start picking deer. And we're like, there's a buck. There's a buck. There's a doe.
They were everywhere, like quail.
Sat there, and they were just laid up in these tight little thorn bushes, and they were just laid up in there. And you're talking about can watch one for 15 minutes, and he will not so much as move his nose.
That's the truth.
And finally, we spotted that 10 point. I believe it was that same 10 point, good symmetrical deer, and I love these big, wide, good symmetrical deer. They don't be that tall. And Jeff's all about these high rack deer and mass and this and that. So we have our two different deals. And so I was behind the gun.
Well, and this deer was—he was a poke. He was like, you know. And we have been shooting all, you know, all through the off season. You know,
I think he was 440 yards, something like that.
Yeah.
So you know, that was a doable shot.
What were you guys shooting?
I'm shooting a 25. I was shooting a 25-06.
And I was shooting a 7 mag.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so right when I'm laying down this deer, looking at it and getting going, we're still glassing, and then I'll let Jeff take it kind of from there when he spots this other deer.
So he's laid down, and, you know, just like any good friend would, I'm behind on the on the spotting scope, and I'm looking at this deer, you know, the deer that he's laid down on. You know, I'm telling Brad, I was like, all right, you know, get some dry fires in, you know, get comfortable behind the trigger, you know, let's range him again. So while he's doing all that, you know, getting his mind right, making sure that he's going to make the best shot that he can, you know, we're looking, and I'm just kind of scanning the country. And I look over in the bush, you know, I don't know, maybe 75 yards kind of up the hill, and there is this deer that just has this freaky mass to him and brow tines that are like unreal. And I just have something for little tight racks that are,
he's high, you know, tight, yeah, but he's high nasty.
And I'm like, Bradley, there is this deer that has mass that's unreal, and his brow tines are like 6 inches tall, you know. I'm like, this is the deer. We have to shoot this deer. And he was like, so he looked at him. He got up off the gun, looked at him in the scope, and he's a little bit closer. He's like 400 yards, 390.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, Bradley, this is the deer we got to shoot. You know, this deer, you know, has outstanding mass. You know, he's obviously, you know, he's a really mature deer. This is the type of deer we're looking for.
And I ain't never seen Jeff so pumped in my life.
I mean, I'm like fired up over this little coos deer. And he was like, I guess he could tell. So like any good buddy, he was like, you know what? He's like, that's the deer you want to shoot. He goes, do you feel like you can make the shot? And I said, if I lay down on my gun and I get some good dry fires in, yeah, that's a dead deer, you know? And so he was like, man, you should take this deer then. And so I laid down and, you know, we got a good range. We ranged, and it's kind of crazy. So this deer was laid down in this little thorn bush and maybe some ocotillos in there.
It was crazy.
And there was another deer laid down next to him. And it was a spike. I mean, this spike was probably 13 inches tall.
Tall.
It's still in velvet. Anyway, we're looking, we're like, which one is this? They were so close together and their heads were kind of facing each other. We couldn't tell which one was which. I was like, Brad, I can't shoot. Like, I can't do it. I don't know. I'm pretty sure the buck we want is to the right, but I'm not 100% sure. And so I bet we sat there for an hour.
Long time.
Trying to, you know, finally waiting for one to clear. And finally, the little spike, he got up.
Didn't a coyote or something run out of that bush?
Well, that was after the shot. Yeah, so the spike got up and he went around and he, you know, scratched himself and then went and laid down. So he cleared and, you know, dialed my deer in and shot. And it was just, made a perfect shot. He was almost dead broadside. He was in his bed. But I mean, I just felt so rock steady on this deer. And so made a good shot and he ran down the hill, I don't know, probably 75 yards and then just started tumbling all the way down it. And, you know, so the high five and everything, you know, we're just pumped up. And then we look across there and there are deer scattered everywhere. We're like, oh my gosh, look at all the deer that were in this canyon. And we look up and then that other buck was there and it looked like he was going to run towards us and then stop. And then, and so then Bradley was going to get down and try and get a shot on that 10 point or whatever he was.
He was probably 500 plus at that point.
But then a coyote came and a coyote ran all those deer off. So, you know, wherever that coyote was, who knows? But yeah. So it was just awesome all together. And then especially, you know, Bradley, you know, being a nice enough guy to let me.
I was going to say, just for the record, you know, while we're on live radio here, you know, I gave up my shot so that my buddy could shoot a deer.
But, you know, everything works out in the end like it's supposed to.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Man, so. That's cool. That's awesome. Man, after coming all that way and spending those days and trying to figure this whole thing out and then finally hitting the honey hole and being patient through that hour and making sure you have a good shot opportunity, man, you guys earned it for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was like just the best reward. You're walking down there and that, you know, the country that you're looking at, you know, and then, you know, like I say, it's not about the, you know, the trophy, you know, the trophy is the hunt, you know, but as you're going down there, you know that you watch the animal fall. So, you know, you did your part, you know, and so you're walking down there and it's like, man, look at this, you know, this is public land, you know, this is, and just the opportunity to be able to do that and have that experience, man, it was just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's super cool.
So then that's when the pack out began. So then we just, you know, we quartered him up, which, you know, looking back, we probably didn't have to. I probably could have slung him in the XO and, you know, put him in the load hauler and just, you know, at hole and then just, you know, packed him out that way. But I don't know, I guess part of the experience. So, you know, I don't think I've ever quartered a deer up until that point, you know, in the field.
Mm-mm.
So quartered him up, put him in bags and hauled him out. And, you know, that was a heavy pack, but, it was definitely a lot easier packing that deer out than it was going in with 70 pounds the first few days.
Yeah.
So did you both have packs then to split them up?
Actually, man, I Jeff wanted to pack his deer out, and I said, man, I'll carry your tripod, and I'll carry your gun. I said, put this deer in your pack, nice. And, you know, I'll take some weight off of you, and we'll split it up.
Yeah, I had the whole deer in my pack, and like you said, he carried, you know, basically all the equipment that I had. And so, yeah, the whole deer, all the quarters, back strap, neck meat, and then, I caped the deer out all the way. So to help with some weight. But yeah, it was definitely an experience, especially for some Texas boys, 14 hours from home, that's never done that before.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So thinking back to this area and you find this honey hole and deer everywhere, I just kind of want to recap, what are some of the things that stand out to you as you look back at it now and play, you know, hindsight being 2020, why were the deer there? Like, what are you looking for now after experiencing that, seeing that spot? What are you looking for now in terms of terrain and cover and what might hold coos deer going forward?
Man, I mean, for me personally, I'd say yes, find the water. I feel like these deer weren't in the most extreme of terrain. It was, you know, it was some good hills and stuff, but there seemed to be quite a few of the big scrub brushes and stuff that they could get in.
Yeah, lots of ocotillos.
Yeah, and there was plenty of place for them to hide and to get into. And, you know, they were probably, like I say, probably half a mile, three-quarter mile away from the water hole when we got on them, you know. So
yeah, and like going into it, for me personally, I'm going to look for water hole. And I'm probably going to draw, like, say, a 2 mile radius around any water hole. And then I'm going to hunt that area. And then I'm also going to look for area that I can see, you know, because I think that there's deer throughout that country. But if I can't see them, that, you know, it doesn't do me any good. So if I can get into an area where there's water and it's semi open, you know, I feel like, you know, eventually if I'm patient and we spend our time behind the glass, eventually they're going to do something to move, whether it's get up and move around the bush for shade or, you know, come to water or whatever, you know, especially because we were in the October month. So, you know, they weren't rutting, they weren't doing anything like that. And so, you know, basically the only thing they're doing is feeding and, you know, going to water.
What were the winds like for you guys in that country? Were they pretty consistent? Were they super swirly? Were you able to pattern them? How did wind play a factor?
Yeah, I'd say they were pretty consistent. I mean, I don't remember it ever just being crazy whatsoever, you know. And then
up in some of your box canyons, you know, that we were in, like the first few days, you know, the winds would blow through those box canyons. But, you know, when we finally kind of got out into more of a rolling hill, it was more just like a steady south wind, you know.
Yeah. The prevailing wind's actually doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome, guys. Man, this is so much good. Anything else that stands out, whether it's a part of the story or lesson learned or just something for next time that you want to make sure we cover?
Yeah, you know, I guess it was either the next day or the last day.
Yeah.
My redemption story isn't from me giving Jeff my deer. We were actually pretty much the last day we had to hunt. We were just actually opposite end of that water hole going up another canyon, another draw, just doing the same thing, leapfrogging. And all of a sudden, man, right at about 200 yards, I say, Jeff, there is a buck. And he was standing there. Good buck. He was looking right at us.
And so I told him, I said, get your gun and let me look at him and see, you know, see if he's our caliber. And so he's getting the gun. I'm looking and I'm like, I didn't want to tell him how good this buck was. So go ahead.
So, you know, we're sitting there and I dropped down where I was at. I found a good spot. I dropped my bipod down, got on. This deer wasn't 250 yards, you know.
If that.
Chip shot. And he's quartering pretty hard to me. And I make the shot. I put it like right in his chest is where I was aiming, kind of, you know, so I'd get all in them vitals. And I shot and that deer hit the ground and he rolled two or three times. And I jumped up and me and Jeff just high five. And we were like, dude, we came in here and we got two coos deer and we did it. And then all of a sudden we look over and that deer is up and going over the ridge.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. like whenever he hit the ground, you know, and like I said, we, you know, I've seen some deer fall a time or two, and this deer was hit hard. And you know, we're talking about 100 and, you know, maybe 120 pounds live. And this deer fell, and I'm like, oh, this, you know, that's, we did it, you know? And I'm, so now I'm telling him, you know, we're high-fiving, you know, this, that, and the other. And I'm like, Bradley, you just shot a 110-inch coos deer. I mean, this coos deer is unreal. And yeah, and then we look up, and I'm like, oh my, it's like, we went from the highest of high to the lowest of low. And then my heart sunk. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yep. So my word of wisdom is, hey, take that 7 mag with you. Don't take that 25-06, you know, because that's what I'm taking this year.
Oh man.
And you know, because, and we didn't, and it was one of those deals, you know, when that we, so the deer took off, you know, up the hill, and then, you know, I dropped my pack, I dropped everything, and I just took off running like a dead sprint, you know, because this deer is obviously going up over the canyon, and I want to see where he's going. You know, we're not going to go chase him down or nothing, but I just want to see where he's going. That way we can give him time, you know, whatever we got to do. And I couldn't catch up with him. I mean, the last time I seen him was when we hit that canyon, and we, you know, we trailed blood, and
we found pretty good blood for about the first 50 yards, and then it just stopped.
And it plus, in the country is just so different out there. You know, it's not, you know, the grass is pretty tall, and so, you know, trailing blood is just would be a total different experience. And so yeah, you know, we're trying to cut tracks, his tracks, and everything else, and then we ended up walking. I feel like we walked 20 miles looking for that thing up and down the canyons and
looking under every tree, looking next to every rock. I mean, we literally scoured that canyon. So who knows?
But that's what we're going back for. We're going back for again, hopefully this year. And then, you know, he's going to be up first. So wow. It's definitely a hunt to do several times.
Yeah. So you guys are pretty like bitten by the coos bug specifically then.
Oh, dude, absolutely. I'm going to tell you what, man, I think about it honestly weekly. Like, I'll just be riding around in the truck, you know, and I'm like, dang, man.
Yeah. And, you know, there's really something about a coos deer. I mean, there's really something about every species. I mean, you know, just as hunters, you know, we fall in love with them all. But there's something about, you know, because, you know, I have mine up in the house, and every time I look at him, it's just like, you know, he's just, the cape on him is so dark, and his ears, the ears on those coos deer are so unique. They're so, I mean, they're almost like the mule deer ear to me, you know, compared to like a Texas whitetail.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, I mean, they're super hairy. It's just an awesome, awesome little deer. Yeah.
Wow. It's definitely a bug to get bit by for sure.
Yeah, that's cool, man. It's making me want to get after it for sure. So many fun adventures to have in so little time.
Absolutely.
So are you guys, pretty content with the coos then for a couple of years here? Do you have plans to get out and get after other species out west now?
We actually are going to do a New Mexico elk hunt this year. We got drawn in New Mexico for an archery tag.
You guys stole my tag?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, with some help of Hunt and Fool and Go Hunt, you know, they steered us in the right direction.
Oh man, you got me.
Yeah.
So we're going to go give these old elk a try and see what that's all about.
That'll be September, that we and really then look. Yeah, sorry. I'm that'll sorry, be September, ahead. And then you're gonna have the coos. You said you guys did that in October.
Yeah, mid to late October. Yeah, gotcha. They're about third week in October.
Okay.
And that's typically the tag that you're gonna get. You know, kind of quote unquote over the counter is, you know, the October tag. So yeah, elk hunt in September, and then a coos deer in October, and then we're waiting on Colorado. So fingers crossed on Colorado
for some mule deer.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. You guys are going to have a heck of a year. Might have to get on and do this here again in a few months and hear about your coos, elk, and mule deer hunts.
Oh, yeah,
love
man.
Love to do it. Yeah, and you definitely got to get out and try that coos deer hunting. It's definitely worth the drive for you.
Yeah, cool. Well, guys, thank you so much for the time, man. This has been not only just fun to hear the story, but certainly helpful for somebody like me who's wanting to get into coos deer hunting. This has been a good primer on, you know, learning some of the lessons that you guys learned with your first.
Sure.
Hey, it was great.
Well, three quick things before you sign off, guys. Number one, don't forget about the giveaway, exomountaingear.com/podcast, and look for the giveaway link. Number two, thank you so much for tuning in. If you're enjoying this, we would love to have you share it with your friends or tell somebody about the show. And number three, if you really want to help, you can also leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you might be listening to this, and that also helps us tremendously. Hope you tune in again next week.